Depending on who you ask, Florida's medical marijuana amendment 2 is necessary to help people battling disease, or it's just a scam to legalize pot in the Sunshine State. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, a discussion over Florida Amendment 2 on the November ballot as we take your calls. Where do you stand on medical marijuana for Florida? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, journalist and author Sadie Doyle on the phenomenon of the celebrity train wreck. Plus, the dedicated cyclists of the Bike MS Tour will tell you about its way through Northeast Florida. All of that and more ahead. But first this hour, in just a few weeks, Florida voters will decide the fate of Amendment 2. Now, the measure would let doctors recommend medical marijuana for patients with a host of certain conditions, like cancer, epilepsy, or Parkinson's disease. Opponents of Florida's medical marijuana amendment are warning that legalizing cannabis would endanger kids and open the door to full legalization of the drug. Supporters say the amendment has overwhelming popular support, will help sick patients, and is also a way to create new revenue for the state. So this morning, with just a few weeks until the election, we're going to take another look at Amendment 2. Joining us here in studio, Susan Pittman of Drug Free Duval. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And in a few moments, we hope to have on the line Leslie Boxcore, founder and president of Electrum Partners. That's a firm specializing in medical and recreational cannabis. And here's our question right now to callers. Where do you stand on Amendment 2? That's the ballot amendment that would legalize marijuana for medical use in Florida. How will you vote? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And Susan Pittman, you're with Drug Free Duval. You've long been an opponent of legalizing cannabis. Just a few weeks left until voters take another whack at this. Of course, it was narrowly defeated 4 years ago. Let me get you on the record as to why you're so opposed, because the Drug Free Florida campaign is ramping up its messaging for voters who haven't made up their minds yet. Where does Drug Free Duval stand on Amendment 2?
Well, Drug Free Duval is a substance abuse prevention coalition. So I just want to make sure you understand it's prevention coalition of abuse. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, we're not trying to get rid of all healthy, mindful use of any drug. The Amendment 2 is really unnecessary, in our opinion. In the first place, I'm holding in my hand an advice from the Florida Department of Health Office of Compassionate Use. We already have approved in the state of Florida, first in a bill in 2014, later expanded by a second bill in 2016, a low THC cannabis and medical cannabis use. So the amendment...
You're talking about the Charlotte's Web strain of cannabis.
Well, initially it was Charlotte's Web, which was a 0.4 or less CBD content, but that's been significantly increased, which brings a reason why we're not excited about an amendment for this use, because as the needs of the people are known, it's quite a rational process to introduce new legislation and pass it. We passed new legislation within 2 years. We were in support of this legislation initially. Mm-hmm. We continue to be in support of it. The amendment process changes things. In your opening, you said that the amendment would allow for the recommendation of marijuana for a host of diseases, all of which you named that were, you know, end stage. There's no one. I travel the country talking about this. No one is opposed to use for end stage illnesses or dramatic illnesses, things like that. The problem is the amendment opens it up to things like pain, sleeplessness, asthma, stomach disorders, things like that, things that we all get all the time. And that just changes the face. That's not it's self-diagnosing, self-prescribing, et cetera. With the amendment, since this is a scheduled drug, according to the federal government, the DEA just came back out again and said, we cannot find medical use. I've sat next to Harvard researchers, Columbia researchers, all of whom say, of course, we'll allow this for end stage. But the reality is we cannot make the numbers work for all these various midterm and small illnesses. So at the end of the day, when we can go get our own medication. It won't be a prescription, won't be on a prescription pad. It won't have how many doses you take, how often you take it, a length of time. Once you get your medical marijuana license, I'm not really sure the rules will have to finalize this, but it'll probably be once every 3 years that you have to go see your physician for reapproval of this recommendation. So we have a hard time seeing how that is actually medical. We are very pro, really healthy, well thought out, stringently tested uses of marijuana. It does show great promise, and we're very in favor of that.
You're in favor of that. What are your comments when you look at the campaign run by Drug Free Florida? In particular, they're warning that if we open the door to cannabis, even if it's for limited medical use, that edibles, which could theoretically be sold, might become available to children.
Yeah, that's a big problem. I actually brought several articles with me that show in some of the states, for instance, California only has medical marijuana. It does not have any other approval of marijuana at this time, although it probably will, but at this time it does not. And just about 4 weeks ago, 19 kids were at a quinceañera party and sent to, well, 19 of the kids at the party were sent to the ER, three of whom ended up in ICU, one of whom was 6 years old. All of these kids were under the age of 18, and what they had eaten was an apricot ring that was infused with medical THC in this medical state. And, you know, we're seeing things like that over and over. We're seeing where people that don't intend for kids to actually get their hands on what's considered a medical product but looks like candy, eating candy, the increases in overdoses and ED admissions in states with medical marijuana with youth overdosing it's shocking.
Ben Pallara, the director of United for Care here in Florida, the group behind Amendment 2, says, and I'm quoting, "The vote no on 2 campaign is creating, in his words, a dystopian fantasy about the way the amendment could be implemented." He says a child getting into an adult's stash of medical marijuana would present the same issues as any medication, and that it's up to the adults to prevent that type of thing from happening. What about that argument?
Well, that's a fascinating argument. And if it looked like medicine and was in a container, you know, when you go to the pharmacist, you can request a container that's not easy to open. I have an 81-year-old mother, and she now has an easy-to-open container. But for many years, because my children were around her, she had the difficult-to-open containers. You don't have, that's not a requirement of this amendment. There's nothing like that. It's not in pill form. It's an interesting concept that he says when there's just masses of evidence showing that this is actually happening time and again in states with medical marijuana that have permitted these, you know, very nicely wrapped candies and cookies and elixirs, drinks that look like, you know, Coca-Colas and things that look like Pop-Tarts. And, you know, they kids would naturally be drawn to this. The packaging is quite attractive to youth. It has bright colors and all kinds of stuff.
The Journal of the American Medical Association published a study about this, looking at marijuana exposures in Colorado, full legalization there, of course, for children younger than 10. And that it found in the last 6 years, kids' hospital visits have increased from 1.2 to 2.3 per 1,000. According to the Washington Post, the study notes that hospitals and poison control centers are still more likely to get calls about poisoning related to things like diaper cream, laundry detergent, or even crayons than they are about marijuana. So what would you say to those who feel that the No campaign is overhyping concerns about the exposure to kids?
Well, honestly, I'd take a look back at the opioid situation. And the reality is, up until 1997, 1998, opioids were only permitted by FDA approval to be used for end-stage illness or very acute horrific accidents in an ED setting, which was typically a maximum length of time of 72 hours. And it was believed at that point that opioids were not addictive. So in 1997, 1998, the FDA issued advice saying that now it can be opioids can be used for any pain. And we see where that's led us. Now, of course, people are going to come back and say, but marijuana doesn't kill, and opioids do. You're right. You're right. In the first place, opioids definitely kill. We see overdoses. We've seen an increase of overdoses here in Jacksonville, along with the entire United States. But marijuana has side effects, too. All drugs have side effects. Aspirin has side effects. You know, so the increased availability will lead to increased use. So I think it's really—
You think it's a slippery slope to open the door to some legalization?
Well, I think we believe that medical marijuana in a truly rigorous kind of study used under doctor's care, regular doctor's care, not seeing your doctor once every 3 months, not going to a person who's going to help you determine how often you should take this drug and what the THC levels should be, et cetera. We think under doctor's care, it could be a very good thing. Mm-hmm. But this is not, the amendment is not medical marijuana in the way that people believe. I was with a group last night and somebody said, well, yeah, this legalizes pill form, right? And I said, no, actually, that's called Marinol, and that's already approved because it's an FDA-approved substance, which has been through the rigorous studies. Mm. So, you know, it's not, I want to be careful. It's not about a slippery slope. It's about us being mindful and thoughtful and saying, do we want to have medical marijuana dispensaries, you know, and all the things that potentially come with that when we don't really know if there's a tremendous medical benefit. And another really dangerous thing that I'm hearing from some doctors is sometimes people self-medicate and they avoid getting some treatment and help. So if you have cancer, you don't know it, you have a lot of pain, you go to your medical marijuana doctor who gives you a recommendation because he's not a specialist, he's not required to be a specialist, he or she, and you take medical marijuana for 2 years, and in the meantime, you have some growing cancer in your body, and by the time you go to a physician for that, you know, you're beyond treatment. So there's concerns like that, too.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, for Susan Pittman of Drug Free Duval as we look at Amendment 2, the measure that would legalize medical marijuana. How will you vote? It's 549-2937 to join us, be part of the conversation. Karen is on the south side of Jacksonville. Hi, Karen. Good morning.
Hi. I've been listening, and some of what I was going to say has kind of gotten taken over already. But given our tremendous problems with OxyContin and that most of the people on Oxy started when they needed pain relief, if these people can get pain relief from something like cannabis, which is so much less dangerous, we actually could be preventing the much more serious drug addiction.
All right, Karen, thanks. And you know, that's the argument the yes on two contingent is making, that this is less addictive, less harmful. It will provide relief for cancer patients who have nausea from chemotherapy, relief for children with some medical conditions. What about that argument?
Well, as I've said several times in this, end-stage illness or tremendous illness, there's no one who opposes that. No one. Not a sheriff, not a lawmaker, not us. So if we're talking, though, about chronic pain, which I believe Karen was talking about, and folks that begin to take opioids and use them for chronic pain, things like fibromyalgia and, you know, things like that, what we would suggest is under rigorous doctor care with measured doses and measured amounts, it might be a fine thing. But with this amendment, it's the opportunity to self-diagnose, self-treat, and self, you know, you are now deciding how much marijuana you want to smoke. When you go to a physician, if you say, you know, you have this particular thing, they hand you a prescription. That prescription is the dose, the strength, how often you take it, when it can be refilled, and you're going back to your doctor for regular mm-hmm. care. A person with pain should be going back to their doctor for regular care, because the reality is it could be an indicator of something else. Pain is not mm-hmm. in and of itself bad.
So do you feel that the amendment perhaps is too broadly written?
Absolutely.
It was rewritten from 4 years ago when it narrowly failed the first time. Do you still feel that it's not written in a specific enough language to allow for some of these concerns?
Absolutely. In the first place, I had the great pleasure of being a policy advisor for Senator Jim King, and he was the Senate president. And he really helped me learn that an amendment to the Constitution, our Constitution is our guiding document for our state. And to put things under the Constitution is really, really serious stuff. And we already have medical marijuana in our state. We had two bills that have passed. We have two pharmacies that are already open, one in Tallahassee, one in Clearwater. We have six approved growers. We could expand its use through legislation quite easily. There are actually applications in Duval County Zoning Department right now for dispensaries in Duval County, just like most of the counties around the state. We have medical marijuana. The better process, from our opinion, is legislation, because if we pass a very open bill this year in the Florida legislature. If the amendment didn't pass, we passed a very open bill. We had all kinds of stuff available. And then we got 2 years down the road as a state, and we went, ooh, we need to make these changes. We can do that very easily with another bill. However, with an amendment, the only way to change the amendment is through another amendment.
What about, I've heard the ads on the radio from the attorney, John Morgan, who's poured millions into this Yes campaign.
Which is interesting.
And he has appeared as a guest on this program, and he has answered critics, about why he's supporting this. But let me ask you, when you listen to the ads, he'll say, the legislature won't do it. They can't even agree with themselves. What would you say to those who don't think the legislature is the best route to settle this, that a ballot amendment is the only avenue now?
Well, I would say, in the first place, we've already passed two bills. So I think the proof is in the legislation. We've already passed two bills. The will of the people is being strongly heard. And so it seems to me that that's an argument that's easily overturned just by the fact that we've passed these two bills.
And meanwhile, we have so many callers who want to talk about Amendment 2. No surprise. It's your chance to connect with Susan Pittman of Drug Free Duval. Where do you stand? Barry in Springfield. Hi, Barry. Good morning.
Hey, morning, Melissa.
Hey.
Good show as always.
Thank you.
I'm a cancer survivor. I have the esophageal cancer, and I am all for Amendment 2. I think that it's something that all this stuff with kids getting into candy and all this kind of stuff, I just think it's another scare tactic. I think that people that are sick really benefit from the effects of this medical marijuana. And you know, when I was in the Army, and that was a long time ago, Melissa, that we always had, when we were in the field, we always had plenty of pot and plenty of booze, and nobody ever died from it. So I just think it's a great thing.
All right. Thanks for the call, Barry. Susan.
Thank you so much, Barry. And hey, I'm really glad that you are a cancer survivor. That's great news. And I bet it was a combination of a lot of treatment that got you there. And unfortunately, while you were suffering, it would have been nice probably to have medical marijuana. But I do want to bring up something that you just mentioned. And you said that you were in the Army a long time ago, and there was always a lot of pot and a lot of booze. Well, I've got all kinds of data here that shows that the pot that was around when we were kids and that many of us smoked is vastly different. As a matter of fact, I have a study, it's as old as 2011, which things have changed dramatically. But as of 2011, the average THC content was like 16% compared to when we were kids, 1.5%. So one of the things that is kind of confusing with a lot of voters that are our age is the reality that today's THC isn't what THC content was in marijuana back when we were kids. And that's one of the realities that is leading to, I work closely with many treatment providers, and cannabis use disorder, which is addiction to marijuana, is actually now part of the DSM, which is the Bible of diagnoses. You can't get reimbursed for any treatment if it's not in the DSM. The DSM now has cannabis use disorder, and it up until recently, because now we are being overcome by opioids, but for the last 5 years, the number one reason people sought treatment in Florida, in Jacksonville, Florida, was for cannabis use disorder. So it is addictive. We are now beginning to see, because of these really high THC levels, actually detox. You know, people going through shakes, seizures, et cetera.
So that goes against the grain of the pro argument, saying that this is a far less addictive drug than, say, drugs that are classified as opioids.
And I don't know. I'm not a researcher. I can't tell you that it's as addictive by any means. But I can tell you that there is the risk of addiction. There is the risk of addiction. And not only is there the risk of addiction, but, you know, Barry, I respect what you're saying, but I'm looking at data constantly. I see pictures. I see, you know, we're in touch with folks all over the country that have already approved this and now are trying to backpedal. And they're trying to figure out how to do this in a really healthy way. We have the opportunity to do it in a healthy way. And we already have legislation on the books. It would be great if we got together, if we approached Tallahassee with vengeance and said what we wanted and needed and got that legislation expanded.
Where do you stand on Amendment 2 and medical marijuana in Florida? Dean is on the south side. Hi, Dean. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to just say that I feel like a lot of your comments are either just disingenuous or you're trying to play both sides of the argument. Like, just recently you were talking about how the medical marijuana that other states have is incredibly addictive, but the marijuana you're using is apparently not addictive at all, the kind that you're using. And then another thing you said, you played the argument where, we obviously have, like in your own words, we all have nausea, sleeplessness, things of that nature. And we also talked about how it doesn't kill people and about how in the rising healthcare costs, it seems like if I had to go to my doctor every other week, that would get quite expensive. And I just feel like it's very disingenuous to put all these burdens on people when it's pretty clear that it's a non-harmful medicine. If I can go get it and self-medicate to get rid of my nausea, I think that would be cool. And hey, what? I have a back injury that's never going to go away. It's a herniated disc. And unless I want surgery, I'm going to have constant pain. And there's no developing condition, no cancer that's going to come from it. I just want to feel better. So what do you say to people like that?
Yeah, thank you, Dean. What about that argument? People saying, look, I don't buy the argument that it's dangerously addictive. I see the no campaign as throwing out a bunch of scare tactics. And if this will provide relief for people, let's join the 25 other states that have gone this route.
Barry, I think, no, you're not Barry.
Yeah, Dean.
This was Dean.
Yeah.
Hey, Dean, yeah. Sorry about that. I feel like we've kind of touched on some of this, stuff. In the first place, I respect that you don't think that it's highly addictive. I do not think it's as addictive as opioids, but we are definitely seeing addiction.
You think that campaigners are underplaying the addictive properties of THC?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And all you have to do is go to any treatment facility in Jacksonville and ask them if they see cannabis use disorder as the primary diagnosis. And it's a very difficult thing to kick. In terms of people with chronic pain, again, we have legislation on the books. If this is something that our people need, then let's get it passed. The amendment is extremely broad and doesn't address specific conditions or ask you to go back to your physician. The reality is if you don't want to have to go back to your physician for a condition, I just have to ask, is it medical? If you want to smoke pot, push for legalization. If you just want to get high, then push for legalization. Don't come in under the guise of medical. If you have a true medical condition, you need to be seeing your doc.
Nicole is at the town center. Hi, Nicole. How are you today?
Hi.
What are your thoughts?
Good. How are you?
Great.
So my thoughts on this are to compare it to an opioid, the opioid epidemic actually is pretty audacious considering that there are no known deaths as far as marijuana is concerned. But also, like, I just don't understand how anybody could be against this legislation. I just feel like it's another step forward to get legalization of marijuana in Florida, which I think would be a great thing. It could be regulated like alcohol or, you know, any of the other things that may seem like a bad thing, but sorry, I'm a little nervous. But
that's okay.
I think this is a really good thing, and I'm very for this amendment, and I think that a lot of people should really get out and vote on this amendment and vote yes for it. But to compare it to the opioid epidemic that's going on right now is just crazy. It's completely audacious to me, and I'll take my question off the air.
All right, Nicole, thanks for that. And by the way, we had hoped to have on the program with you, Susan, the president of Electrum Partners. That's a firm that specializes in marketing medical and recreational cannabis, to talk about the pro argument for taxing and regulating this drug so as to create a new revenue stream for Florida. But what about Nicole's comments?
Nicole, I appreciate it. I'm glad you're a voter. I hope you get out and vote. What I would say, first of all, is I tried to be very clear when comparing it to opioids. I said it doesn't cause death, but there are many other side effects of the use of any drug, certainly marijuana is included. As a matter of fact, we're seeing a dramatic rise around the United States of young men, of teenage boys, with both psychosis and schizophrenia. That's a lifelong diagnosis, both of those.
And when you talk, and by the way, Susan Pittman of Drug Free Duval, we're getting pushback regarding your statement a few moments ago that marijuana leads to addiction and withdrawal symptoms. Here's a tweet for you from Chris, that seems contrary to all drug education I've received. Where can I read more about that claim?
I will provide Melissa with all kinds of data, and you guys can pull it up, okay? I have loads sitting here on the desk, but in addition, we have studies from Harvard. We have studies from the state of Colorado has a very rich report now after 4 years that goes into a whole bunch of these different things. The detox situation is fairly new. Most of the researchers believe that it's because of the high THC levels. You know, the THC levels, when you use dabs and things like that, you can get THC levels as high as 80, 85, 90%. And as I said, with any drug, you can overdose on aspirin. You know, you have to be mindful that this is a drug, and you have to look at the reality of the outcome. And so what I would say in terms of the amendment versus legislation, in the first place, Nicole, you mentioned legalization and this being a way into legalization. If we want legalization as a state, why don't we pass legalization then? Because we wholeheartedly agree that with full legalization, we could regulate it just like we do alcohol and other drugs. We think that would be a much better situation.
And you mentioned Colorado a minute ago, Susan. Colorado and Washington have had full legalization now for a few years, which gives other states a window into how this might work. What lessons do you think can be drawn from the legalization of marijuana in a state like Colorado?
Well, I'm looking at an advice from the superintendent of Cherry Creek Schools, held in my hands, from this fall of 2016. And he explains he's really sorry. The lead-up of legalization of marijuana in 2012 brought plenty of rhetoric regarding the positive impact on public schools in Colorado. He goes on to say that hasn't happened. We are only receiving a tiny, tiny percentage of the money that we had been promised because the costs related to the marijuana distribution are so high, between safety, between the drug driving accidents, between these other things. In addition, I'm looking at another. This is actually from potguide.com, who says that Colorado lost $25 million to the black market. There is still a black market. They have both medical and legalization of marijuana, and yet there's still a black market. So the promise of taxes, there are some significant taxes, but the cash flow is not available because of the related costs.
Lots of comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Meanwhile, Nick writes, it needs to happen. I have so many friends, this would help. Bradley, we clearly see people abusing medications that are, as you pointed out, Susan, properly labeled. I'm not against proper labeling of strength and dosage, but to turn the amendment down due to that, I feel is wrong. From Janice, I will vote for Amendment 2 and feel that cannabis should be legal for recreational purposes. Not getting any anti-2 comments so far, but we want your comments wherever you stand on this.
But can I comment on that last Facebook comment? Because whoever it was said that they believed in this amendment because we need legalization. This isn't legalization. If it is, get down and fight with your legislators and say, we want you to pass a bill for legalization. Because that's one of our big problems here is there's a lot of sick folks out there, a lot of hurting folks, and they will self-diagnose, they'll go self-treat. They may be actually missing a real significant medical treatment they need to get.
Lots of calls for Susan Pittman of Drug Free Duval. As we look at Amendment 2, that's the measure you, the voters, will decide. In a few weeks, where do you stand on medical marijuana for Florida? Stephen in Jack's Manor. Hi, Stephen. How are you? Good morning,
hey,
Stephen. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I was listening to a few points here. And first off, I'll say I've been in the medical field for about 10 years here in Florida. I go out in the field. I've never seen overdose or any death related to marijuana. It doesn't exist. But on that point, I want to just kind of talk about some of these talking points I've heard go on. so far. Research so far in the world I know of, we've got 50 years of research in Israel of marijuana, and it's being actively given out in its form, not a synthetic form like your person here's talked about a few times. Synthetic forms are not a pure form of the drug, so they come with way more side effects actually than the purest drug that you can ingest or however you want to use it. And the other problem right now we have is it's a class one narcotic. So and the government's saying it doesn't have any medical substance, yet there's almost 25 states now that are going that route of saying it is has medical purposes. That problem too is opioids, a synthetic form of heroin, have multiple classifications allowing that drug to have multiple chances to be researched. And currently also there's research being done at the University of Florida here in Florida. And John Hopkins in Colorado is doing medical research. So all these places are doing wonderful research now because of these amendments and laws that have passed to help medical marijuana surpass all of the 80 years we've had of propaganda that
and Stephen,
the drug looks so bad.
Stephen, you mentioned you're in the medical field. What do you do?
Mm-hmm. I work fire rescue.
Oh, okay. All right. That's Stephen calling in. All right. Thanks for those comments. Susan, what do you think?
Thanks, Stephen. Well, in the first place, I did not mention any synthetic marijuana to the best of my recollection. And what people refer to as synthetic marijuana is actually not marijuana. It is a synthetic cannabinoid, and that's an entirely different thing. So what we've been talking about today is the marijuana that individual people grow, that some states authorize growers. We actually have 6 authorized growers here in the state of Florida. It is the grown plant. It's the actual plant, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to kind of dispel that. And again, I want to be very clear. I am not saying that marijuana kills. However, is that the only... I'm a mother of 4 children, and there's many things that I would be concerned about with my kids, many outcomes. Death, of course, is the ultimate outcome, but there's a lot of other outcomes that are deeply concerning. And like I just mentioned, there's a very high trajectory of young boys using marijuana who are now having early onset psychosis and or schizophrenia.
Where are you finding that data?
I will send it all to you, Melissa. It is Harvard reviewed. It's, you know, it's peer reviewed information. And I want to be clear, we're not saying it's a cause, but we see a correlation. That's the kind of thing that needs more serious look, serious study. I'm a mother. I love my children. If I got them approved for medical marijuana for a purpose that, you know, they, sleeplessness or pain or, you know, a football injury, and I didn't want them on opioids, so I chose this. And then they ended up becoming a chronic user and became psychotic. That would be a horrific outcome to me, too. It's not just death.
Carla in Nassau County. Hey, Carla, thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling because I am currently, this weekend actually, I took my last dose of an opiate. I was prescribed for pain for a car accident I had. And it was really difficult because I didn't have extreme pain every day. And as my pain got better, I wanted to take less of the opiate and, you know, just not take it if I'm not in pain. But I couldn't because I would get extremely terrible withdrawal symptoms. And that is something that is just, it's terrible, and it affects you personally and emotionally, not just physiologically, because you feel like you don't have control over yourself. And recently a friend from another state I visited them, and they gave me a little bit of marijuana, and actually that really, really helped with my pain without the side effects. So right now I can't do much about it other than a weekend vacation, but I would really like that option to be available to people like me who we just need it while we get better, who are not necessarily dying, because honestly, living with pain is very, very difficult, and it can have a long-lasting impact even if the pain itself is not long-lasting.
Yeah, Carla. All right, thanks for that call. And Susan Pittman, she summed up the pro argument, I think, for the, for those who voted, will vote yes again. It did fail by a couple of points 4 years ago. We'll have to see how the vote plays out. But, of course, in Florida, ballot amendments like this require 60% voter approval. What about her remarks? And what are your closing thoughts about where drug-free Duval stands on this?
First, Carla, sorry about your accident. And yay you for taking your last opiate. That's really, really good. The side effects that you're talking about with the opiates are one of the huge reasons there's been so much misprescribing, et cetera. And on another hat, we actually are fighting a nationwide battle trying to make sure that physicians are better educated. And, you know, even when your pain was diminishing, you should have been diminishing use of that and, you know, whatever. Anyway, this is, you actually spoke exactly why we believe this should stay in the medical realm, because if your pain can be better managed with marijuana, then we need to put this through the medical, the true medical field, and allow you to have access. But to let you know, right now, you can go to one of the pharmacies, the one in Tallahassee or the one in Clearwater, or you can get a prescription from, that's not a prescription, excuse me, you can get a recommendation from one of the prescribing doctors around the state, and you can have it filled and delivered to your home. So you can legally obtain medical marijuana right now in the state of Florida.
Right. That is possible. Although, of course, for people that couldn't make the drive, their argument is it should be more readily available.
Right. Which it will be. Like I said, we already have two requests at Duval County Zoning right now. I mean, this is already coming. That's, so to sum it up for us, we believe that the amendment should be, that the Constitution should be held out as a very broad instrument under which we can create the legislation that makes sense for our state on an ongoing basis. We believe that there is some great redeeming value to some of the components of marijuana. We're excited about that being rigorously studied. We don't want to keep anybody end stage who is or suffering chronic pain from getting pain relief. And we hope we all vote well and vote smart and show up at the polls.
I'm sure we will have a good turnout this fall for a number of reasons. But in the meantime, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. And thanks to all the callers.
Yes, thank you to all of the callers. We couldn't get nearly half of you on. This is such a hot topic. But we're pleased to speak with Susan Pittman, who heads up Drug-Free Duval, as we look at the issue of Amendment 2 in medical marijuana. And much more still ahead later. A look at this weekend's bicycle run to raise money for MS research on the First Coast, one of the biggest around. But up next, celebrity train wrecks, what they say about our society's views on women. That's in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Beyond the stump speeches and the latest headlines,
everything she touches has turned
bad. And I are running a campaign of issues, not insults.
Build the wall.
Equal pay for women's work.
NPR brings you
the American people don't feel certain.
It is quite a struggle across the board.
I just don't think it's as easy to get by in the world today.
The voices of the country. Listen every day.
Morning Edition and All Things Considered every day on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Spend some time in the Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT invites you to vote for your favorite submission. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the Square and to place your vote, Visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. Well, she's everywhere once you start looking for her. The train wreck. Whether it's Britney Spears shaving her head, Whitney Houston saying crack is whack, Amy Winehouse dying in front of millions. The train wreck is as old and as meaningful as celebrity and feminism itself. From Mary Wollstonecraft to Charlotte Bronte, Billie Holiday, Sylvia Plath, and even Hillary Clinton. Author Sadie Doyle's new book, Trainwreck, dissects a centuries-old phenomenon and asks what it means now when we have unprecedented access to celebrities and when women are pushing harder than ever against the boundaries of what it means to behave, what that word really means. I spoke with Doyle last week. Let's listen. Sadie Doyle, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
When I first heard about your book, I immediately thought about Amy Schumer and the movie Trainwreck. But this is about a much wider phenomenon. It really is a shot at modern-day misogyny more than anything, is how I read it. Is that what motivated you to write this?
I think so, yes. I think that, train wreck is one of those words that comes with an instant image attached to it. You probably think of any number of female celebrities, Whitney Houston, Amy Winehouse, Britney Spears, who have had quote-unquote meltdowns. But what I found was that it was really a way of describing an unacceptable woman, a woman who was sexually too much, emotionally too much, or preferably both. So as I dove further and further into exploring train wrecks, what they do wrong, why we get so angry at them, what, if anything, they can do about it, I realized it was really sort of just describing how modern misogyny operates. And it's not always modern. These things have old roots, and there are old stories in the book, but it wound up being a fuller picture of misogyny than even I had expected.
Yeah, and you do look at historical examples such as Sylvia Plath, and many others. But when you talk about women's behavior, their sexuality, their emotional range, their persona, is it as if society is unable to accept women who go beyond these very strictly defined limits of what we think is acceptable behavior in a girl or a woman?
Yeah, I think it's that we're unable still, even now, to accept women as people with inner lives and drives of their own, needs of their own, sexuality that exists on its own term rather than, in response to male desire, emotional lives that aren't always convenient to the people around them. This is inner complexity that we've always sort of accepted in men. There are plenty of men who've had, wild sex lives or complicated personal lives, and we've loved them for it. But when a woman goes through that, she doesn't become a rebel or a boundary breaker. She becomes a train wreck. She is often shamed viciously and sort of beaten back away from the public eye.
Yeah, and let's talk about some of the modern-day celebrities that you refer to, like Kim Kardashian or Britney Spears, and how their stories compare to men of young famous men of their generation who maybe have gone through troubles and different types of relationships and struggles.
Right. Well, I mean, we're so angry at Kim Kardashian for showing up naked. You saw in the fairly brutal response to her being robbed a while back, that was a near-death experience. She was pleading with people not to kill her so that she could see her children again. And the response was, well, why does she post so much on social media? Why does she let us see her naked if she doesn't want to be violated? But if you look at, young men, I think Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, even I think Brad Pitt in his day, these were guys that were known for going out and partying and having a lot of sex. And they weren't, that did not exactly decrease their appeal. If anything, it increased it.
Right. And and I love the historical perspective you give in this book, too. Do you have a favorite historical example of a woman who was known as a train wreck in her day?
My personal favorite in the book is probably Tyra Wines. AmeriCorps, whose name I'm sure I just mangled because I have terrible French pronunciation. But she was a female French revolutionary, and she was really ahead of her time in that she was ardently in favor of women's rights, you know. She saw the revolution itself as a woman, and that, you know, did not ever really enter her press narrative. Instead, she was a spectacle because she dressed like a man. People saw her in places where she, you know, never was. They saw her ride a cannon through the walls of Bastille when she wasn't even in Paris. She was seen as disgraceful. Even the other revolutionaries laughed at her and thought she was ridiculous. And I thought, this is a great example of how, when there's no support for women's selfhood, when there's no support for women's agency, she was essentially seen as either a spectacle or a madwoman until the end of her life. And now we look back at it, and she was actually right about half the fights she was having.
What are your thoughts about the recent polling that was revealed this month, showing that if the election, the presidential election, were limited only to male voters, Donald Trump would win in a landslide, and if the election were open only to women voters, Hillary Clinton would win in a landslide. Just a stunning gender divide.
Right, and we've seen those divides open up, you know, along other lines and other intersections of oppression. I think people of color, by a fairly huge margin, are rejecting Trump, too. But I do think that Hillary Clinton and the question of quote-unquote likability has always haunted her. She's a really good example of someone like the women in this book, and in fact, there is a bit about her in this book, because she has always presented herself in a way that is subtly unconventional. She has always seemed to want more power, to have more agency, to have more ambition than we really allow a woman to have. And for that reason, people have a very visceral reaction to her that they often frame as, you know, personal dislike. I just don't like her. Men may even have it more than women, because I think, you know, women are obviously recoiling from Trump to a large degree. When you have a guy bragging about sexual assault, when you look at the number of women who have actually been sexually assaulted in their lifetimes, it's not hard to understand that women would instinctively know this is not someone they trust or like or want to give power to. But I think women also have a little bit more sympathy for Hillary, because we have been through that process of being overly scrutinized, being picked apart, being seen as out of place or out of bounds when we want something out of our lives.
And so, as people kind of digest the ideas in your book, do you feel that they should look at these issues in a kind of depressed way, or do you think the trajectory is going in a positive direction?
I'm torn on this. I think if you look at the material of the book, if you look at how women's emotions are harshly policed and pathologized every time they express them too viscerally, if you look at how women's sexuality and bodies are consistently used as a bludgeon or a reason not to take them seriously, you can get depressed. There are some bleak stretches in this book, you know. But we have the power right now, because women are more public than they've ever been, because women are more likely to have channels for public expression than they ever have in the past. Even if you're not famous or notable, you're likely to have a Twitter or a Facebook or someplace where you can make yourself publicly heard. We have the power to shift these narratives. We have the power to challenge them, both by presenting our own lives more honestly and by resisting train wreck narratives when they're fed to us by the press.
Sadie Doyle, thanks for being with us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And that book is called Trainwreck. Well, finally this hour, it's part of the number one fundraising cycling series in the nation. The Bike MS PGA Tour on our scenic coastline will raise money to battle multiple sclerosis, and it's happening Saturday at TPC Sawgrass. Corina Madrid, president of the National MS Society North Florida chapter, is here with us, along with Ellen Kelleher, first flight team captain and cyclist living with MS. Ladies, good morning.
Hello.
And Karina, Hurricane Matthew might have knocked us off course for a little bit, but not for long. This ride is coming up Saturday.
It is happening on Saturday. We have an incredible team of veteran volunteers and professionals who have helped us reroute. We normally go down to Daytona. In fact, this is our 30th year of doing Bike MS in our community. So we've got four different distance options going through St. John's County on our one-day event, a little abbreviated because of Hurricane Matthew, but we're really excited about putting on a terrific event on Saturday.
Ellen, you'll be biking. You're a team captain and cyclist. You've lived with MS for over two decades. Events like this help patients like you with research and treatment.
Right. I've had the disease for 24 years. I was 23 years old when I was diagnosed, and I woke up one morning and I had numbness on my left side. Within just a few days, had completely covered that side of the body. And at that time, there was no medications available at all. I had had several other symptoms, but fortunately, the first MS medication came out about a year after I had MS, and I was very fortunate with timing to be able to start the medication.
And you look the picture of health. You told me a moment ago, only your closest relatives would even know you have any symptoms. And so, incredible progress, Karina, in the treatment of MS. But very quickly, for people that want to be part of this, because this is a way to drive MS research forward and be part of a great event, people can register, show up Saturday morning. Tell us quickly how people can be part of this Bike MS tour.
I think the easiest thing, Melissa, is for people to go to bikems.org. You can also find us on Facebook. There's all the information there about our routes, registration, and fundraising tools to help you make this event the best one ever.
And this is coming up Saturday. Let's hope for good weather along our beautiful scenic coastline. It's the biggest fundraising cycling series in America this Saturday. It's the Bike MS Tour. Here on the First Coast, Karina Madrid, president of the local chapter, and Ellen Kelleher will be out there biking strong. Ladies, thanks for being with us. Have fun.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Murchart. Michelle Corum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchuk. Diane Reams up next with a look at Donald Trump's claims that the election is rigged against him. That's coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.